So it's a pleasure to be here on a Monday before a holiday that probably most of you like me didn't know next Monday was a holiday. So that's kind of exciting. I want to start with something I found in The Lion's Roar, a Buddhist magazine, and it was titled A Buddhist Prayer. There's no author, but it says, "Evoking the presence of the great companion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourself and towards all living beings. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of needless suffering. With reverence for life and with awareness of the suffering that is going on around us, let us pray for the establishment of peace in our hearts and on the earth." It seems to me that the world is slightly askew at this point. Even after the election and after the vaccines are now available. And I don't know about you, but I was hoping for like sunshine and lollipops and everyone would suddenly be filled with love and compassion and so forth. And what I've been observing instead is a great many strong feelings and fixed views about politics and about social and racial justice and about lots of things, about who should travel and who shouldn't, and if it's time and if it's not, and a lot of things. And the level of vitriol that I've been experiencing, not personally, but observing and watching. I stopped watching the news in 2020 because the election news was so devastating to me. But then towards the end of the year, I took up listening to podcasts. And you know, I listened to Pod Save America and Pod Save the World and Pod Save the People and Your Undivided Attention, which is the one about the social dilemma and all that. And it seems to me that they've all, at least in my hearing of them, have all gotten a really quite tied down in being angry and frustrated and afraid and so forth. So it's funny that it's not about who will win or lose the elections at this point, or who will win or lose something. But we're in this stage where it seems important to identify people who have taken a misstep or who have said something or done something that we, whoever the speaker is, doesn't approve of. And then it's important to listen to these podcasts and conversations I've been listening to when I'm out in public. Important to really chastise the person. You know, we talk about cancel culture or you know, the extracting a price from folks who have made a mistake. And you know, I'm not suggesting at all that we stand down and tolerate any racial injustice in language or transphobic speech or anti-gay and lesbian speech. But I do think that we're in an interesting place in the world where the question is, whose job is it to make those judgments about who's been wrong and who's been right? And where did we, or when did we stop as a people wanting to stand side by side with our brothers and sisters and teach and learn and move together down the path, in our case, the Buddhist path, as described in that brief prayer. So in our country, we have 72 million people who think that the last 4 years were just fine. And many of them, of course, think that those 4 years would have continued if it wasn't for all sorts of nefarious things and carried out by radical, crazy people on the other side. And there are 80 million people who think that all of those folks are of questionable intelligence, morals, character, et cetera. And doesn't seem to me to be any movement towards reconciliation, towards restoration, towards people coming together. And then, of course, that leaves 175 million other Americans, young, old, and just not interested in having those conversations. And so for me, I've been thinking about what is our practice as Buddhists and as LGBTQI Buddhists, maybe allow us to think about contributing to the world, and what sort of healing comes naturally to us. You know, Buddhism is a compassion practice and a wisdom practice. And I also think it's a healing practice. Mel Weitzman, who was the abbot at the Berkeley Zen Center and recently passed away about a month or so ago, famously said that no one showed up at the door of a Zen Center who wasn't broken in some way. And so we come seeking healing for ourselves, from each other, for each other. And it's a really positive thing. And I think that's one of the things, you know, our practice being grounded in wisdom and compassion, the healing can come very naturally for us. And in our community here on Monday nights, we came together to 20 some years, you know, about 20, almost 20 years ago. And it came together because there were civil rights violations and oppression and discrimination and hatred. And we came together to provide for each other a place to be safe, a place to practice, a place to walk the path with each other. And it was a place of healing and continues to be for many, many of us. And I think that's so important. I've been looking at a book called Bringing Zen Home. It's by Paula Arai. And the subtitle is The Healing Heart of Japanese Women's Rituals. And so she went to Japan. Paula herself is a Buddhist teacher and scholar. And she went to Japan and took a look at the practices that were there. And she came back with this book. And one of the most important things for me in the book is she teaches the way of healing. And Paula says that there are 10 principles in the way of healing. And so I'll just read them. I won't go through all of them, but I will read them to you because they're important. The 10 principles are experiencing interrelatedness, living the body-mind, engaging in ritual, enjoying life, nurturing the self, creating beauty, cultivating gratitude, accepting reality as it is, expanding perspective, and embodying compassion. And so that's a list of 10. And then the book, if you wanted a further detail, is really goes on to explain all of those and much else of the what she calls domestic Zen, which is alive with the realities of day-to-day life for the women that she studied versus temple or monastic Zen, which is a lot about forms and rituals. So this domestic Zen is about the Zen we actually live. And Paula puts it this way, Buddhism is an experiential tradition. It teaches that you must test a behavior or activity for yourself to see if it helps stop suffering. Nothing is taken on faith. Therefore, Buddhism has a rather pragmatic undercurrent running through it. Likewise, healing is a pragmatic experience. What works for one may not work for another. However, all of the people that she studied found experiencing interrelatedness was helpful in the healing. And so that's what I think. There are a number of things on that list that have worked for us in this particular Sangha over the last 20 years, over the last 20 minutes. And those include that experiencing interrelatedness. We come here not just to sit Zazen, although that's very important. It's a principal practice for most Buddhists. But we come to sit Zazen with lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and other folks and who are here. And so that sense of interrelatedness becomes important, becomes a refuge, if you will, a sanctuary from the world. Living the body-mind is the second one. And we know that in Buddhism, the idea is that it is the wisdom of the heart and the courage of the mind to live according to the heart. So it's that body-mind connection that leads us, hopefully, to live in compassion and to live in kindness. Engaging in rituals, because it's important for human beings to have rituals, Paula says, and it is in rituals that we can find some comfort, whether that's your morning practice or sitting at an altar or where you go to relax, a seat in your garden or your backyard, a walk up a hill or by the ocean, but to have some rituals that nurture your life. And then enjoying life, cultivating gratitude, accepting reality as it is, and expanding perspective. And then I just want to think for a minute about the one that she calls creating beauty. And Paula sees this as three components that we really ought to include in our lives, because so much in life can be dark and can be foreboding and can be conflictual. And And that goes with the one that says, just accept reality as it is. That's, there is some of that. And then expanding perspective. And so the principle of healing that's about creating beauty, Paula says there are three ways to do that. One is simply by observing beauty. You know, Trina has a beautiful flower in her square right now. And at some point, she or somebody took a picture of that flower because they were walking down the street, maybe thinking about a meeting they just had at work, or, you know, some conversation that they were going to have later that was going to be difficult. And that beautiful flower was there on the side of the side, on the side of the path. And somebody said, ah, look at that. Isn't that great? And so it's just bringing into your life by observing beauty, finding things that are beautiful to you. As Paula said in that introduction, it's different for everybody, but making a point in every day of your life to find something that's beautiful that you can bring into your life as an expanded perspective on some of the negative stuff that just comes up in the course of daily life. The second part of creating beauty is, of course, creating beauty. And that can be arranging an altar in your home. It can be writing a poem. It can be whatever talent that you happen to have. And even if you don't think you have any, arranging a nice table for your family to sit at for a meal, arranging a beautiful meal. But to do something that actually engages your mind, heart, and your body, your action in creation of beauty. So there's observed beauty, and then there's creation of beauty. And then the third component that Paula refers to is the idea of behaving beautifully. And that can be beauty in action. So it can be dancing. It could be doing something else beautiful with your body. It could be simply taking care of your body, taking care of the body of someone near to you. But that idea of beauty in action, so that rather than sit around maybe a little bit wrinkled up or turned in because we've been on the computer all day, maybe a little forlorn because things are not going well or whatever, and it's, you know, whatever it is, but taking that opportunity to move beautifully, maybe get up and do some stretching, do some exercise, do something with your body that actually makes you feel, that actually, if you engage with a friend or a partner or a loved one, both of your bodies feel better. And that's a really powerful thing. And that the creation of beauty and the expanding of our perspective then to have a world that has some reality that might be dark and complex, that might be neutral, but now includes some beauty that you have observed, that you have created, and that you have embodied fully. And that the result of that is a return to the Buddhist core teaching of embodying compassion and healing. So I think in this world that we live in, we have this opportunity to remember that that's who we are. At our core, we're people with a spiritual practice that starts with sitting in this moment, sitting in this very moment and taking a good look at who I am and what I have become based on the tensions of the day, based on the experiences of my life to date growing up. And so it becomes really, really important, I think, for us just to take an active role in creating beauty. And I think it's Tricycle Magazine that has as its byline, changing the world one mind at a time. And I think as Buddhists, we really do believe that. You know, the Buddha went off and sat under the tree for 9 kalpas of kalpas, whatever it was, he sat under that tree for a long time by himself, so that he could fully arouse in him the compassion to teach the Dharma to others, the way to others, the way to end suffering. And so I think that becomes a really important thing for us, that if we can bring strength and beauty and character to ourselves, then we naturally will share that with each other in communities like this one. And then we naturally, as a community, will share this with our families and the people that we come in contact with. So I think that's the first part of it, is just owning the possibility that we could create change in the world one mind at a time. And then I think the other thing that gives us a big opportunity in our practice is that we also think of Buddhism as a forgiveness practice. And part of forgiveness is renunciation. And that's a concept that you know, we in Buddhism talk about from time to time, and we're not quite sure what it means. Getting lots of messages flashing up on the screen. Not sure what that is because they're too small for me to read, but hopefully it's good communication, whatever it is. So the renunciation is according to the teachings of Gil Fronsdal, one of the most beneficial, empowering, and freeing practices in Buddhism. At its purpose, it heightens the best qualities of our hearts and minds, and renunciation is not meant to diminish, but rather to enhance. And so what do we mean by renunciation? Renunciation can be understood as letting go of whatever binds us to ignorance and suffering. Renunciation, letting go of whatever binds us. And so a lot of the conversations, a lot of the conversations that I have overheard recently, and that many of you have overheard recently, that engage people engaging in conflict rather than debate, engaging in name calling or questioning people's motives or characters or any of that kind of stuff, is really because we're hanging on to some need to be correct. Our understanding of the virus, our understanding of vaccines, our understanding of the nature of politics, our understanding of an insistence on racial justice, but we're attached to it. We're attached to the concept, and we're attached to demonstrating to others that we are correct. And I think what our renunciation practice allows us to do in Buddhism is to say, you know what, I can let that go. I can stay committed to the things that bring value to my life and value to our Sangha, value to my community. And I can have right view, which is that I want to do those things that are helpful. And then that I can say, but I can let go of the need to prove to anybody that I'm right about that. And I can then let go of the need to prove that anybody else is wrong about it. I can listen, I can learn, I can hopefully engage in some educational dialogue about the issue, not about the character of the person I'm talking to. And that allows me to really operate from a space that is very quite liberating. It's really quite liberating and positive. And then the practice that we know it yields many benefits, I think, this practice of renunciation. Clinging to being right all the time, or thinking I am right all the time, or in the old days when I actually was right all the time, it's exhausting. It's exhausting to keep up perpetual banter with today's headlines and so forth and so on. And so letting go of that, the renunciation of the need to be the expert in the room or the expert in the conversation, becomes really freeing. And the good news is that once we begin to do that, once we let go of that need to be right and to be in control of the flow of the conversation, what happens for us is that we then can practice the Buddhist practice of forgiveness. So if I can let go, release, and get rid of those feelings of having to be in charge, it then allows me to say, and maybe the other person in this conversation, and maybe the other person in this conversation also will have the opportunity to release and let go. They won't need to prove they're right and prove I'm wrong if I have started the conversation at a compassionate exchange level rather than, and then this other level. So the idea of renunciating is expanding that perspective that Paula talks about in those 10 steps towards healing. So just the last thing I'll say for today is that there are in Buddhism the four right efforts, and they're really, really simple. To put an end to existing evil, to prevent evil from arising, to bring good things into existence, and to encourage and promote and arouse the good things that already exist in life. So those are the four efforts of what the Buddha calls the four great efforts. And we get this opportunity, if we believe we're in a healing community and we believe that the world has got a little too much anger and conflict in it right now, then we do these four efforts, which is when I notice that, I'm going to try and do something about it. when I notice good, I'm going to try to arouse that. I'm going to try to diminish the negative and the evil and the conflictual, and I'm going to try to arouse good, not because I'm right about it, but because there's all the balance between those two things. They both exist, and the degree to which we can balance them makes I think a very positive a positive effort. So this idea of living in a healing community, I go back to the words of Rumi, who said, if your words are not more important than silence, be quiet. And so I think that that's one of the ways that we can practice, is if we are a little quieter, we'll notice the context and the emotion in a lot of the debate and discussion that we hear around us and here in the media. And we'll have a chance to make a different choice about how we're going to respond to that and engage in that. And we can work to diminish the conflictual and the negative and the hateful language. And we can work to arouse beauty and opportunity to really show up for each other in a way that's very positive. Somebody posted recently a poem by Rachel Naomi Remen, and it may have been somebody here last week. So if you did, I'm going to repeat it, and thank you for giving it to us. I don't know where it came from. But she's Rachel Naomi Remen, R-E-M-E-N, says, "May I escape the shame, inadequacy, self-judgment, and self-doubt my training has taught me. May I trust that my love is as needed as my knowledge. May I remember in me the limitations of every person. May I be open to my darkness and true to what light I have. May I be used as a blessing and a friend to life." And so it's just this opportunity to say, you know, if we accept the reality that the world isn't a fully happy place all the time, that there's a lot of conflict and stuff going on, then what can we as Buddhists who are interrelated in an LGBTQI sangha, what can we bring to the rest of the world? And I think it's that interrelatedness, that perspective sharing that we do, and starting with Trina's square on this Zoom call, the observing and creating of beauty. So I invite you all this week to have a beautiful week and to go out into the world and spread what it is we share with each other. Thanks.
Stephen, thank you. We have a minute or two. If anybody wants to make any comments.